From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.
Welcome to Postcard from Poprad, boys and girls, the weekly look at the news-ish. And boy, have we got loads of stuff to squeeze in this week. I'm Eric Wiltshire at the base of the beautiful snow-covered Tatry Mountains in the beautiful town of Poprad, which is in the Slovak Republic. It's getting a little... I'm going to have to put me long johns on soon, that's for sure. And across the pond, the stagnating pond, and to get it right this week, the zit on the nose of Europe, it is none other than, in the UK, Mr. Lee Banks.
Good morning.
But it might not be.
It's a good morning. It's
if you're morning. In Every Australia, it's good night.
Oh.
Isn't it?
I've never thought of that, yes. So, well, no, it's just my natural exuberance. I'm talking about it being morning.
Or
it might be in morning. Ha-ha, you didn't know that.
Could be, but maybe it isn't. But we'll come on to that later, as we could be, boys and girls, the saviour of world broadcasting in the English language. Scary thought, isn't it? We'll also be talking about rock music this particular week. We'll also be adding into little comments about the Pope. Sir Paul McCartney getting yet another honour. Poor old Ringo started a bit of a problem. We have to apologise profusely in advance to America for something we're exporting, and I'm really sorry. Poor old Subo's in trouble, and zombies for Lee. plus. Loads more. So we'll get on very quickly. Lee, have you got a couple of messages you wanted to do?
I've just got three, yeah.
Off
one
you go, then.
To a good friend of mine, Wes, who is 30 tomorrow. Just happy birthday to him. Then I want to berate somebody called Liz from Twycross Zoo, who's already written to be planning Christmas. Thank you. And
Bah humbug.
Yeah, exactly. And to my son, who finally flew out to Delhi, or is finally flying out to Delhi today. I didn't realise he was actually going to India. I thought he got a job in a posh food shop.
You're such a heathen, aren't you?
If I wish to be. Oh, and Dorothy.
Oh.
She's 97 today. And she's on Skype.
97?
And she's on Skype, she tells me.
Well, that's very true. I remember we did a story about a young lady who was over 100 chatting away to her grandchildren on Skype not that long ago.
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's right. So you're nothing special then, Dorothy.
No, she's very special. Actually, what you're we ought to do, if Dorothy's got a microphone, we could get her on the programme one week.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
I do.
Well, like, yeah, all right. Go on, then we'll ask her.
I think that would be absolutely fabulous. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, serious moment. We'd just like to send our condolences to those affected by the 9/11 attacks a couple of years back, and hope that your lives are now moving forward somewhat. And we also want to remember this week the 40-odd thousand who suffered at the hands of the Luftwaffe in the Blitz in World War II, as we're commemorating the 70th anniversary of that attack on the UK starting. And I was very proud to see on the news some of the veterans actually still having a smile on their face, even though they had some horrific stories to tell. But as they said, you can't keep a good Englishman down.
Absolutely not.
Because we come back fighting. That's what we do. It's a true story. There's a great phrase in the UK which says you can push, and push an Englishman. Do it one more time, ba-boom. And they fight back. Because that's what we do.
I've never heard that saying.
Have you not? It's like the other one. The Brits are very famous, and our boss loves this one because he said it's a great trait of the English. Before they go bananas about something, they always sleep on it and then make a structured judgment the next morning. And that's very true.
Not as much as Russians.
Stop it. Because we've got lots of nice listeners out there. So do I, actually. I'd like to go again. I haven't been for a long, long time, but I'd like to
go. I've not been for over a decade, and I want to go, yeah.
But I had another story flashing in my brain, which we won't do. First off, on off, it's been, well, no, it's a church thing.
Yeah.
I,
this it's not even a church thing. You can't dignify this by saying it's a church thing.
You're never going to believe this. Me phone's going, Lee. Hang on.
Your phone's going, Lee?
I'm just going to answer me phone, Lee, while we're live on the radio to see how somebody's driving lesson's gone. How was your driving lesson today, dear? Hello?
Hello?
Oh, no, she's gone now, because as soon as I said we were on the radio, she put the phone down.
So she's having a driving lesson, is she?
Yes.
Is she in the car?
She's on the car, so we're all walking in the middle of the road and left the cars in the garages. Anyway, back to the plot. With this lunatic chap in America, what's the latest state of play with this guy about the Quran in America, Lee?
Well, he's going to do it again. Last night he wasn't going to do it. Now he's going to do it again because he believes that somebody lied to him about about where they were going to build the mosque.
I think he heard what he wanted to hear and didn't hear what he didn't want to hear, in my opinion.
That's right. The bloke who was, I've forgotten his name, I haven't got it with me, says that actually he was reading something into it that wasn't said. So he's going to burn the Quran again. What an idiot.
He's got some kind of not massive mandate to do this as well, hasn't he?
Well, he's got a few followers, yeah. Like, I think 6 people go to his church, don't they?
Something like that. Well, I can guarantee you there'll be a few more idiots that will go because of what he's doing. But these people just don't think of the bigger implications on life, do they?
I don't know whether they do or not. I just think these sort of people are incredibly dangerous. And there should be a law against him being able to do this. When the Nazis burnt books, when books were burnt by all sorts of fascist and strange regimes, there was a world outcry.
Yes.
And this is just designed. Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean, yeah. And this is either just self-publicity because he wants to make his mark on history, or it's an absolutely ludicrous, incendiary, vicious thing to suggest doing.
So we're saying to the man, don't do it. For whatever reason.
Shut your church down and grow up.
Or something like that. Anyway, so let's just hope this pans out nicely. Because it does get a bit silly. And there are, I think it's 2.8, nearly 3 million Muslims in the UK. And I'll tell you a story about 9/11 quickly. After 9/11, I went to a big shopping mall in London. And there was this young lady, I mean, I couldn't tell you how old she was because she was wearing a full regalia with just her eyes open to see where she was going. And she was struggling with a pushchair and a small baby. So I walked up to her and said, oh, can I help you? And she sort of turned and her eyes looked at me very wide. She said, oh, thank you. And we went up to the top floor where the car park was. I said, oh, can I carry the pushchair buggy thingy over to your car? And she said, oh, thank you. And you could see, even with the small slit, she got like weepy eyes. I said, are you all right? So she said, yeah, but nobody's done anything nice like that to me since 9/11. And
really?
I thought, that was... because the fact is, with any religious problem, it's a very small minority of people that are causing the problem. The vast majority are just regular people. And that's the problem.
I agree with you. Yeah, that's right. The people, you know, who are over here now. I've got loads of Muslim friends because of where we live. And and they're good people, just the same as the bulk of...
Everybody else.
Yeah, and it's but idiots like this bloke, I can't even remember his name.
Don't say his name, even if you can remember it. Don't say his name. No, don't give him any publicity.
I agree.
Anyway,
he doesn't deserve anything.
No, Lee and I are now about to fall out big time.
Are we?
Yes.
What are we doing?
Well, Lee's got this theory that journalists are actually the new police force within many countries of the world and should be given greater powers, by what he's been saying to me when we're in the office, to do more. And I happen to say no.
Yeah, right. Well, I don't care what you say anyway, because I believe I'm right. No, really, in a serious vein, let me say that once again, because of this thing about bugging phones, News of the World bugging phones, journalists once again are being portrayed.
Hang on a minute, let's just explain that to the rest of the planet that don't know what the hell you're talking about. News of the World is a rather large newspaper which is very well renowned for investigative journalism, especially if it can have a pop at politics or famous people. What they've recently done is regurgitated an old story from many years ago about the News of the World boss, namely now the Director of Communications for the Prime Minister of England. Why am I not surprised? And so therefore the whole thing's kicked off again. And to be honest, I have to say, the guy who originally did this, they bugged some mobile phones, actually went to prison. And do you know what? That's absolutely right, because that's the law.
Yeah,
he broke the law. He broke... If a journalist is speeding, you don't turn round to the policeman and say, "Excuse me, I'm a journalist. I can speed if I like."
You know what? You used to be able to do that. No, seriously, honestly, there is an old law in newspapers, and it was when drinking and driving was quite a popular thing before they had the breathalyzer and stuff like that. And what you used to do, and I'm sure you've done it, was have first editions of the newspaper in the car with you.
Yes.
And if you got pulled by the police, you say, "All right, mate, just finish work. Here's a copy of the paper for you." They go, "Oh, thanks a lot, mate. Carry on. Be careful." And that's it. Things aren't like that anymore.
Actually,
I'm not saying that was a good thing.
Actually, there's a true story from an old schoolmate of mine who worked in a brewery. And his job was to taste the beer, not drink it. He didn't drink it. His job was to taste
that job all my life.
To taste the beer. And he had, at the end of the day... had he taken a breathalyzer, he would have been arrested, even though he hadn't drunk any alcohol. And so what he had was a special certificate for him to go to and from work where he wouldn't get breathalyzed.
No, I've heard of those happening before. Here's a quick one for you, very quickly, on the same sort of thing.
Go on.
I got arrested about 14 years ago for a crime I hadn't
just
committed.
Just the once? You told this story before.
What? About the letter?
Yeah.
Oh, right, carry on, then.
Jeez whiz. So anyway, you want journalists to be allowed to bug people's phones. You want them to be able, under law, to take photographs.
I'm being grossly misrepresented here.
Oh! That's funny. Right, journalists being misrepresented. Funny that. Yes.
Now, what all I was saying, ladies and gentlemen, before he totally misrepresented me to the world, was that actually, if you think about it, journalists are the second biggest investigative agency in the world.
Probably.
In the UK, there are 40,000 journalists. That's all there are of us. But there are only 140,000 coppers, right?
Yeah.
So we are running a close second to them. But we have no powers.
Why should they have powers?
Because we're the second biggest investigative agency in the world. And we investigate.
Hang on. Now, answer the question again.
Investigate.
Answer the question again. Why should a non-regulated group of people have
we
the
are
same...
regulated
no,
because
not.
We have no power. You are regulated if you have no power.
Eh? No, you're not regulated because nobody's regulating you.
Everybody's regulators. We regulate ourselves. The newspapers themselves regulate themselves. But we have no powers. Therefore,
excuse me, I'm just going to start an army and regulate myself. Marvellous.
No, we are regulated by the fact that we have no powers to actually do anything. So what we have to do is find circuitous routes to show up, to shine a light in the beds of the people who are doing wrong to this world. Take Tony Blair.
Mm-hmm.
Why has he been pointing out, right, the fact that in his book, one of the poignant moments in his book where he meets the Queen, it's actually taken verbatim out of the film, The Queen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the police aren't going to investigate that.
Well, why would
but
they?
It's quite a salient, because it's not actually a crime.
Well, there you go.
Well, at least we went out and investigated and we're showing people up for what they are. Journalists need more power. We should be able to go to the courts and say, we want to bug these phones.
I've got a really good question for you, just to wrap up the subject, because I noticed that it's the same everywhere. You have programmes called What the Papers Say.
Yes.
Yes, they do them on radio and on television, on news channels and all sorts of stuff like that. And I just don't understand this, you see, because technically television and radio is competing with newspapers for news content. So I would suggest all the television and radio stations around the planet don't do what the papers say, don't give the newspapers free publicity, unless they're going to do exactly the same thing for you in their newspaper. And if they
How? Newspapers do. We tell everybody what's on the radio and what programmes are. We review programmes on the radio. That's our
review
job.
Review programmes. How can a bunch of lovey, arty... people review good programmes?
How can a bunch of mutants who are too ugly to appear out in public and have to hide behind a microphone be able to comment on newspapers, you big southern softy?
Well, how does that work on television presenters then?
They're all cutouts, they're not
real. Oh, I see. Okay. Moving along to more arguments coming up any second now. Apparently, rock anthems are vanishing from the...
to make me incendiary, aren't you?
Vanishing from the UK pop chart. This is according to official figures from the Official Chart Company, which is what the radio stations work to, or lots of them anyway. Sales of rock singles have dropped by almost 18% in the first months of 2010, compared with last year. Now somebody else is calling me. I don't believe this. Whenever I get on the radio, everybody's calling. Do you want to say hello to the world?
I'll say hello to the world.
Will you?
Freddy. I'll carry on for you.
No, he's gone now. See, I don't get it. He's put the phone down on us. Marvellous.
Right, just didn't want to speak to you, did he? No. What did he ring for?
I don't know. Music Week magazine said just 5 of the 100 best-selling singles of the year so far were classed as rock, and the biggest seller was Don't Stop Believing by Journey, which came back in the charts.
That's not rock music. That's not rock music. That's a torch song.
Don't Stop Believing's not rock music.
No, it's a torch ballad.
You've just upset every Radio Caroline fan in the blessed planet. It's an anthem.
That's what I said. It's a torch song, a ballad, an anthem. It's not a rock song. It's not a rock song, something like The Bride Still Waiting at the Altar.
Journey and like Don't Stop Believing is not rock. Anyway, that came back into popularity because of the TV show Glee, because one of the newbies covered it. And the radio bosses are moaning about the fact there's not enough stuff out there. Now, in 2008, Coldplay, Kings of Leon, Nickelback, Oasis, blah, 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 The Verve as well, were all in there. But this year, Muse, Biffy Clyro, Reckless People, only come in the top 20. And so what you've got this year is huge bands or artists coming through. The likes of Owl City, which was a great track because that was Helping Haiti, the supergroup.
Who was that?
Owl City. Guys doing the Haiti... What's the word I was trying to think of?
Tribute, the other one, fundraising thing.
And then you've got Usher, Eminem, and Katy Perry.
Yeah, but she's not a rock musician, she's a girl.
That's my whole point, they're not playing rock now. Where's mention of Bob Dylan in this malarkey?
His Royal Bobness had two number one hits last year, that's why it's a load of rubbish.
But they're not
two number one hits.
But the Official Charts Company says there's no Bob Dylan.
The Official Charts don't exist anymore, Eric, you know this, the music charts don't exist. It's a matter now of just sounding.
Downloads.
If you actually downloads. If you read the story properly, right, it says that I'm quoting the bloke who did it. I think rock music will always be there. People love it and are buying albums or are going online and getting more than one track at once. That's your answer. It's not that rock music's disappeared. It's that rock music's back where it should be, underground.
So very few people are interested in it then.
No, everybody's interested in it. Even Dorothy at 97's interested in rock music. She was telling me last night as she whispered in my ear.
Gosh, moving along very quickly then, because we'd like to hear Katy Perry lots. She's ever so nice, isn't she?
She's
She's just a nice old... What is she doing with that bloke of hers? I don't know.
I know. Would you give her... No!
Stop it!
No, Russell Brand. Russell Brand's lovely.
Oh,
my young lady said she would leave me for Russell Brand. Well, I said I'd leave her for Russell Brand.
Everybody would leave you for Russell Brand. apparently, there's no decisions. This is a big story running around about the BBC World Service, which I had an honour to be associated with a while back, because of World Service cuts. So could this mean English World Radio could depend on Lee and Eric?
God forbid.
Apparently, there's no decisions taken yet as to whether the BBC World Service's annual grant, because it's actually granted from one of the government departments, should be cut. And that's the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. Now,
Tell me, Eric.
Yes, sir.
You know, this is a serious question. What is the value to the World Service?
The value of it? I think the biggest value for everybody is the huge respect the BBC's got in terms of news. It's got huge respect in many disenfranchised countries of the world that wouldn't get news of the type that you can get from the BBC because the local media blocks it and censors it completely. Even to the point of newspapers having to run everything past the government before they can print it. So that's one way where the BBC on its shortwave services, which I know we take the mickey out of, and will eventually stop because there'll be no need for me in future years. But they do set a great benchmark, and they do an incredibly good job and keep people in touch at the most important times. I think that's what the BBC does really well.
I think that's a very good answer.
As to the longevity of it, the BBC's got a huge problem, which many broadcasters have got, because as the world moves across to a digital platform, and, you know, eventually, even though countries can try and censor the internet, it's virtually impossible to do it if people want to try hard enough. The BBC's got this horrible job of trying to go from one old technology, which has been around since the 1930s, into the modern world, because if you take shortwave across Europe, very few people listen to that anymore. Nobody wants when they can get their app, their iPhone, or their digital radio, or their computer, or their laptop, and they can listen to FM quality. So they have got problems to sort that out. But hey, that's one thing that they'd have to work out, not us, because we're in the digital revolution.
Come to us. Come to us.
We are the way it's going to go. and finally, as we get towards the end of part one, as many of you will know, the Holy Father, the Pope, is about to visit the UK with estimated cost being predicted at £22 million. And Lee actually got in touch with the Vatican, didn't you?
I did. And he told me to get lost.
I'm not surprised. Well, they wouldn't talk to
him. In a very sort of religious way, yeah. The reason I got in touch with them was to ask, quite simply, why is it costing £22 million for the Pope to come across here? Mm. Give me a breakdown of those figures, please. And they said, no, we won't.
It's confidential.
And I want to the answer. That's what I'm talking about, investigative journalism. Mm. Investigative journalists should find out why it's costing £22 million to bring 40 people plus the Pope over here.
Hang on a minute. But there again, there's lots of other people that will pick up on that once they get here. They've got to contribute to a whole bunch of security stuff.
Yeah, but the security is going to cost £1.5 million.
Yeah.
Eric. That's what I'm saying. If you take it, say there's 40 people coming across and say it costs them £1,000 a night to be in here for a week, you're looking at something in the region of £28,000.
Yeah.
And £1.5 million to police it. Then they'd probably have to have a bit of Vatican, you know, holy wine and stuff like that. It doesn't total up to £22 million.
I wouldn't be surprised knowing the economy in the UK. And then you're whinging about Charlie as well.
No, dear, you're just misrepresenting me all the time today. Now, I'm saying that if the Pope, it costs £22 million for the Pope to come across in his Popemobile, right, and Prince Charles, old big ears, he's travelling the country by train.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's costing £50,000. for him to do it, and he's got his own little Roberts radio on the train that he has to listen to at night before he goes to sleep.
Nice. Actually, a good bit, because this is where journalists, again, get on a stupid high horse. And so I thought I'd have a look this morning, because I genuinely made a mistake, by the way, Lee was... Because I know Lee, so you know, he's positively negative. That's the good thing about him. Positively negative. So I thought he was having a pop at the royal family. And I am very proud and honoured to say I am a royalist, even though I don't live in the UK. And apparently, the figures have been done
now. That's only because we met the Queen and Prince Philip.
Well, that's very true. The cost to the taxpayer of the royal family went down last year to 62 pence per person. But the Crown Estate now generates £22 million annually for the British Treasury.
not I'd say for the Pope's visit.
And apparently the Queen pays the highest tax rate of anybody in the UK. Now, I worked this one out, actually. The population of the UK, according to the National Statistics Office, is 61,792,000 people, or thereabouts. That was in mid-2009. Yes. So, multiply 61 million blah, 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 times 62 pence, and that makes £38,311,040.
Yeah.
The Crown pays 226 million people in tax.
Yeah.
You pay 38 million. You owe the Queen about 180 million.
Yeah, well, she'd have to come and check it out me nose.
And by the way, just as a point of reference, do you realise there's over 7 million fans of the Pope in the UK now?
That's right. That's right. And how much money have they paid towards this £22 million visit?
Actually,
it's
quite
ludicrous.
Quite a lot, I think. Because it was quite,
exactly, of course they have.
But if they're proud of going to see the Pope, what's wrong with that?
It's not. There's nothing wrong with the Pope coming and spending a fortune on coming across here. Mm-hmm. But I think it is absolutely a ludicrous figure, and it should be investigated. Well,
you should be quiet.
Prince Charles can do a similar thing for 50 grand. Why is the Pope doing it?
The Pope's in Italy, right?
Yeah.
He's bringing £22 million to the UK economy. I'd shut up if I was you.
I don't think he's bringing 22. I don't think he's paying the British economy 22 million, old chappy old fruit. He's like, it's just somebody should find out why it's costing
But he can't be, because if he takes a private Boeing and flies from Italy to the UK, that would cost him about 25 grand, roughly, right?
Well, right, so we're up to nearly 3 million now.
No. So he's got 25 grand for a plane, probably. He'll get a discount anyway. And back, so that's 50 grand. Out of 22 million, the rest of the 21 million, which I can't do the numbers, means it's going to go into the British economy. So shush.
No, it isn't particularly. What are we going to do? You can't spend £22 million on Guinness and red wine.
Well, that's probably true. That's about it for part one of Postcard from Poprad, boys and girls. We'll be back in part two, where we're going to try and get through. I don't know how we're going to try and get through the rest of this lot, but we'll give it a good shot. So, don't forget, milk, two sugars, tea in the cup. Takes 2 minutes. We'll be back after this very, very, very short break.
From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.